Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 675. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, just with the usual bevy of wrestling on these days, watching wrestling while recording a podcast about wrestling. since it's wall-to-wall wrestling, so if you would like to choose that route. We're going to zero in on the return for right now of one Mr. John Cena, who came in and confronted Roman Reigns after he had just beaten Edge at Money in the Bank. And like every smart performer, he had new gear ready to go and ready to sell.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely does. He absolutely, he always will. Cena is that guy. Maybe one of the loudest ovations anyone has ever gotten. Just it was a hell of a moment. Once again, as that veteran, as that guy, Cena knew how to milk it for every second it was worth. Everything he did was just in tune with the audience. It was a sight to see. Even if as so called smart fans, we kind of saw it coming.
It is kind of interesting that, you have returning star Edge, who's there full time, I guess, if you want to say that. And it was kind of wild that, I guess you knew that Roman Reigns was beating Edge, but it was still kind of interesting. It's just like, sorry, Edge, you got trumped by John Cena just like you did most of your career. That was kind of interesting to me. But and I also, as you were talking about it, realized that I never went back and watched John Cena actually coming out after. I saw some of the pictures on Twitter, but honestly, I mentioned this on Twitter, but I had literally thought that the Big E winning the men's Money in the Bank match was the end of the show. Like, the way it was being, that win was being treated, like, I felt like, oh, yeah, this is the send-off. And I just hit, whatever I hit. Because it was just like, I need to go to bed anyway. And I kind of missed the moment and caught it in, caught it afterwards. But I actually did not listen to, the ovation that Cena got there, because he still got a huge ovation Monday night on Raw.
That he did, yes. Once again, taking advantage of what they established a long time ago, that John Cena is a free agent. He was able to open up Monday Night Raw, and once again, great reaction. Knew exactly how to get the crowd going. Officially challenged Roman Reigns for SummerSlam.
And I guess that was not, Yeah, it was kind of interesting for him to debut at the pay-per-view, I guess, but it does make sense if you're trying to get some additional surprise eyeballs on all your events on Peacock. And I guess that's another thing that I kind of forgot, that there was that somewhat large gaffe in Peacock. I'm going to assume that you experienced that also.
Yes, we all experienced it. Everyone on Peacock experienced that, yes.
I mean, I guess, unfortunately, these days, I do find the come out of the app and then back into it is a way to resolve the problem. But honestly, I guess I just expect better out of apps these days. Like, that used to be a big problem, but I do feel like, in general, everyone has minimized that, if not outright gotten rid of it, which was what made it so annoying.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely annoying, but eventually people started saying, oh, we got it back, just back out and click back in. And that worked for the rest of the show. It was fine. It was good. It was fine for the last two matches.
Yeah. So, yeah. John Cena's up next for Reigns, I guess, considering I just used those words. Like, because is there anything really else to say about Cena taking on Reigns? Especially with the fact that, I mean, I'm going to assume that he's going to put Reigns over, because everyone keeps on talking about Cena having to film another movie here come August or so.
The result isn't necessarily in a lot of doubt, which I guess is kind of hurts it, but it's still a huge matchup of obviously John Cena returning, a bigger star than he even was a year ago, and Roman Reigns obviously a bigger star than he was a year ago. It's a huge match.
Yeah. And
to do something special at SummerSlam, it's the way to go. Yeah, I mean, not the most in-doubt result, but the road to get there should be fun. And surprisingly, today it's turning out that John Cena is, for the next 5 weeks, he is back. He is doing, I think it says every Raw, every SmackDown, and every house show between I think this weekend and WrestleMania. I mean, SummerSlam, excuse me.
Oh. Yeah, I guess that doesn't really surprise me, the way John Cena operates in general. It does really seem like he genuinely loves... And honestly, you can say the same thing about The Rock. You know, like, there's something that those guys obviously do value about coming back and having a live audience. They certainly like their larger dollar numbers on their paychecks, but they do seem to quite enjoy being in the wrestling product. Because, I mean, I guess The Rock wasn't in for house shows, but he was on pretty much every show for that one stretch that he was a feud with Cena that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, he was on a lot of Raws. He even did some SmackDowns during the time when SmackDown was really, 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 you know, down in the dumps. And yeah, but of course, not actually wrestling on the shows and definitely not doing house shows, because with a schedule like this, Cena's not just showing up at these shows just to give a rah-rah speech to the crowd. I imagine he's wrestling.
And
what would he do on Raw every week for the next 3 weeks? How many episodes?
In 5 weeks at SummerSlam, I believe, was how Cena worded it. So we have at least four more Raws in between.
Okay, he's skipping a Raw. He's going to be on this Monday's Raw. Skipping the next Monday's Raw. He's skipping Chicago? That's a weird one.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big town. He's doing the Sunday Super Show in Detroit, but not doing Chicago. That's interesting. But doing Raw on August 9th and on... Okay, he's only doing two Raws, and it looks like every SmackDown.
Uh-oh.
Which makes sense, but even the two Raws he's going to do, I imagine at some point he's got to actually have matches on these shows. Especially doing the show that Roman Reigns isn't on. But yeah, we'll see how that all goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to go to house shows, so I guess it doesn't really matter, but I would think that it'd help him with timing and whatnot, having not wrestled for quite a while now. Because, I mean, it, it, I would because, yeah, he hasn't been on at all during the pandemic era, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I mean, he did WrestleMania, but that was the Firefly Funhouse match.
Oh.
So John Cena has not had a proper match in possibly two and a half years. I know he came back in 2009 early. He had that weird return where he just showed up for a few weeks on Raw and SmackDown and then didn't do the Royal Rumble. It was a weird... And then didn't have a match in WrestleMania either.
Oh.
Back in 2019. It was kind of...
Yeah.
And Cena's returns for a while have been kind of weird and actually, with a few exceptions, largely unimpactful, actually. This is really the one that matters, actually.
But it's gonna be it should be a really good matchup, and it'll be, I guess it'll be interesting to see what John Cena does or how much he wrestles. But I would think that he maybe wants to get things right before he wrestles Reigns, which good on him for that. But that is kind of crazy knowing what was it. You know, I mean, everyone brings up The Rock. Did he tear an ab or something like that? Some type of core muscle. If I'm not mistaken,
torn abdominal, and I think I had a hernia.
So it is a little bit, you know, that seems to be the most surprising part of it, that you know, that he's allowed to do this much outside activity. Honestly,
if he's going to go right to filming a movie, but then again, it's this weird movie that's like filming in England, and there's about 20 different stars in it. So who knows? Maybe he's only got a cameo. Maybe he's only got a 5-minute cameo in it. Who knows?
Yeah. You never know. So I almost transitioned to this earlier, having said up next. And I guess we officially got Goldberg is the one to challenge Bobby Lashley next.
Yeah, that's an interesting choice. It had gotten out towards the end of last week. Some people didn't necessarily believe it or want to believe it. And then Goldberg shows up and pretty much proves that the internet can be a very small echo chamber of negativity. Oh. Because, boy, was Dallas glad to see him. Then again, after sitting through that Jackson Riker match, I'd be happy to see Goldberg. I wish he would have showed up a little earlier.
I mean, it is always one of those ones where, I always kind of, when you talk about nostalgia, or I've talked about nostalgia, like, I've always at least tried to frame it like, I kind of know I'm a little bit in the minority, in that I don't care. You know, like, I kind of get why, Raw doesn't have anyone right now that would be a good challenger for Lashley. So it makes sense to have a fill-in, especially for a show like SummerSlam. But to have that type of a reaction to Goldberg coming back, yeah, not going to be me. But like you said, like it's undeniable. That crowd was pretty bonkers for his return. That's why these guys keep on coming back.
Yeah, and we saw a number of reasons why they keep coming back on Raw, because after that moment, after Cena opened the show, and after that, and not including that moment with Goldberg, and then the surprise finish at the end, that was not the show you wanted to put in front of the first Raw crowd. And Dallas was game. I do not blame the crowd for going silent at multiple points during the course of that Raw.
Yeah, because I'm trying to... okay. This... there's so much weirdness going on. Because I guess I forgot... I almost forgot about the fact that... how weird this show just was. We got a number of new faces. Like, Keith Lee, honestly, you could still call him a new face in a lot of ways. But, and it wasn't completely surprising. Like, he's another guy that you could have challenge Bobby Lashley and take a loss and at least look credible doing it. I'm not sure what that... everyone seems to think that Keith Lee can bounce back from that, but I'm already getting to the point where... they're starting these guys out in holes that are so big that they've got to dig out of. And I guess I just don't understand the logic in it. You know, like, I get that it... he is a big body for Lashley to beat after an impressive win over Kofi. But you haven't seen Lee since January. And that was another thing that was killing me during that segment when Byron Saxton's like, is that his music? And I'm like, Keith Lee was only on for like a couple of months. Like, I'm not going to remember his music, guys. Like, their standards for remembering names and or music is just weird in general. There were a lot of tangenty points there. Is there anything that you can reply with?
Not necessarily the way I would have brought back Keith Lee, but he stood toe-to-toe with Lashley pretty good. I mean, it was a dominant win in the end. We can't deny that. Lashley really, you know, needs these wins, so we're piling them up.
I guess he can possibly bounce back from it, but with the NXT track record and whatever has gone on with Keith Lee since January that's been so weird that no one knows any information about. Like, I guess that's kind of a large part of my problem. Like, there's that weird... he almost got a... what's his name? Who's gone from the WWE now? Lars Sullivan break. And it's just kind of weird when you don't know why someone got a break like that.
I would argue it's none of our business if it's a personal health issue.
I suppose that's possible.
I imagine it had to be something, you know, some kind of an actual health issue, not an injury. And it's cleared up. He's cleared. He's ready to go. So that's the good part.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is good to see him back. I hope that that things move in the upward trajectory for him moving forward. But I guess also popping his head into Raw was NXT champion Karrion Kross And the moment they announced Jeff Hardy as his opponent, I'm like, oh, this is going to be an easy win for Karrion Kross. Jeff Hardy has been on a losing streak. Then we have Jeff Hardy cheat the win, which gets cheered, and Kevin just gets extremely confused.
They have no respect for Karrion Kross. They do not. This is absolutely ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. I mean, I am no fan of Kross. He shouldn't be in this position in the first place. He should never have been NXT champion. Probably should never even been signed. I honestly care that little about him.
it is just one of those ones that I'm like, if you're gonna screw him over this bad, why aren't you spending that time in a different way?
They had a match last week. He could have dropped that title. If they really wanted to put him on Raw and just let him sink or swim, as they say. But he's still NXT champion. And he's never actually been pinned on NXT.
But then they don't treat him any better on NXT.
Yeah, no, they don't. You could almost argue that the way that Cole and Gargano tear him down on the microphone is worse than losing to Jeff Hardy. Because everything they say is true. At least Jeff Hardy won a pretend fight over him by putting his feet out by cheating. I mean, Cole and Gargano just absolutely bury him with all of his legitimate faults and flaws.
Yeah, and then he didn't have any of the, like, and I guess that's the other thing. Karrion Kross did not have Scarlett with him, like, and I know that they had talked about, you know, there had definitely been a number of reports that he'd been on Main Event without her, and that, you know, they were floating using him alone. I'll tell you what, I'm just going to say I'm thinking Wikipedia is a little bit wrong. I feel like I saw Karrion Kross as 6'5 or something like that on Wiki. But man, him standing toe-to-toe with Jeff Hardy and not really maybe being an inch taller, I'm like,
no. And then Irish interviewer guy wasn't even that much shorter than Karrion Kross.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that 6'5 is a work height at this point.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I mean, wait until there's a moment where he's standing, you know, face-to-face with Randy Orton. I'm not going to say, like, almost. When he's standing next to her or face-to-face with Randy Orton, we're really going to see. That man may not be more than a legit 6'2".
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'm gonna, and I actually kind of meant to look that up just to see what Jeff Hardy's height was, honestly, because, like I said, I guess I didn't think Kross was that much taller than him, and, yeah, so 6'2 would be, to me, what do they have him? They have Jeff Hardy listed as 6'1". So yeah, 6'2 sounds about right. Think that Wikipedia has given Karrion Kross about 3 inches of credit that he doesn't really deserve. And yeah, it's gonna make a difference on the main roster where there are, like you said, bigger people. Like even just the Randy Ortons of the world who are like, you forget how gigantic he is until he's next to someone that's like 6 foot, and then you realize like he's a head and a half taller than them. Oh man, yeah, but not giving Kross a good start, like, I'm kind of with you. Like, I guess I like him, or I don't dislike him as much as you do, but I don't think he's that special either. Cross. Like, he's just kind of a warm body. And it's, yeah, again, like, to me it's just weird. Like, if you're going to bring an asset up like that, you either go with that, you know, John Cena, Kurt Angle type of situation where they fight hard, but they lose, but it would be weird for Karrion Kross, who is at least legitimately quite a bit heavier than Jeff Hardy. You know, it's kind of hard to have that type of a win. So, like, your next, to me, your only option is just to win against Jeff Hardy. Like, just, like you said, part of an abysmal show that, you know,
I enjoyed it in my own way.
Fair enough. I don't know. What do you think of 3MB now feuding like a decade later with Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal?
You know what? It's a fine feud. I don't know if we can give you. If we can really. It's where we're going, but. You know, we've seen Jinder carries himself well. He's grown to carry himself like a star, but, you know, his work is not the most exciting thing in the world to watch. As a SummerSlam match, I'm not convinced that those two one-on-one is going to be anything special.
Yeah, I can definitely see that being the case. Like, this is one of those few instances where I think the story is going to end up being better than the match itself. Like, it usually is the reverse, where the match is great, but the story was trash. And, I guess I don't think the match is going to be trash, because, like you said, like, Jinder just... Somehow he makes Randy Orton seem exciting in the ring. Like, I know that Orton has the RKO and all to help kind of really end the match, but I guess I've grown to appreciate Orton's kind of methodical nature in the ring, and plus he really hasn't done a reverse chin lock in quite some time, I don't feel like. Right. Which has helped his offense quite a bit. Mahal kind of has this similar, you know, methodical pace to him, and I guess that's why I kind of want to compare them. But it's just, and I don't even know if stripped down is the right word. Like, it's not methodical enough. Like, I guess it's kind of interesting that no one's kicked out of the Colossus, but he also doesn't do anything like Orton. You can almost see him weakening the opponent the whole match with his tactics. Like, I guess I don't feel like Mahal brings that kind of intensity, or like he doesn't necessarily work over the guy's back because that's what he's throwing him down on, or he doesn't work over the guy's neck to help soften him up for the Colossus. Like, there's nothing that's, you know, it doesn't feel like it's leading to, his offense doesn't feel like it's leading to the Colossus.
You're right. It's an interesting story to do between these two with such a long history. We'll see how the match turns out.
Another interesting part of Raw, Lily is out of timeout.
Yay! Yeah.
Eva Marie and Doudrop keep on having mic time, but they've still done nothing to establish why they're together. And I'm okay with Alexa Bliss trying to kind of split them up to start with. But it's still a really weird story to try and wrap your head around that really does not get me engaged.
No. Not at all. It's, Alexa's act has worn completely thin. Eva Marie never really had an act to even wear thin. Drew Grapp will be fine in a number of different situations. But they're not, they're not doing the story right as far as, they're not telling us the story. They're not telling us the story of how they got together, what, what hold Eva Marie has over Doudrop. We've seen that they're not friends. We've seen a little bit that Doudrop is not, completely comfortable, just being called Doudrop or being linked with Eva Marie. But then why is she? They did in their second match together where Doudrop, short-armed Eva Marie and jumped off the apron. Why did they do that then and then just have them back together the next week? I don't understand any of this. I don't know what they think Eva Marie brings to the table in this day and age. It's all a mess.
Yeah, I mean, I think she can bring some heat for, not being able to wrestle, but again, there needs to be some, it's almost so over the top, her claim, she hasn't claimed a win for herself in a couple of weeks, but it's so ludicrous, it's not even one that really sinks in for you, when she has claimed the win. It's just everyone knows you haven't done the work, lady. It's one of those, I don't know who you think you're fooling here. So that really doesn't help the storyline either.
No.
Are you excited that Reginald may be out of the women's division on Raw?
Yeah, definitely good to have him out of that situation. I was hoping he'd go away forever, but I guess if we're just going to keep the 24/7 title, it's just been the same thing for two damn years now, and it's ridiculous. It's even more ridiculous when Truth isn't the champion, really. That's just now we're going to have Reginald do his gymnastics routine all over the place. I guess, whatever, it's fine. That could hurt any other part of the show that matters, I guess.
It's another one where I really don't understand what Reginald has on the writers that makes him such an important part of Monday Night Raw and or SmackDown. It's just confusing to me. I guess I don't think he's terrible and he could probably do something, but again, they're not doing him any favors with how he's being presented. I mean, he's pretty much cost everyone all of their matches, whether it's Carmella or Shayna and Nia.
Yeah.
This guy has just seemed useless at every turn, and it's just I know that the 24/7 title honestly hasn't been around that frequently. But, you're putting some type of faith into someone if you're giving them any title, even if it's the 24/7 title.
Yeah, I mean they just want him to flip out of all these wacky scenarios for a while. Beyond that, I don't think there's really much of anywhere to go with them. I mean, we've established that the women of WWE kick his ass, so what's he going to do? Challenge Bobby Lashley someday?
Oh, I would highly doubt it. But yeah, it does leave, I suppose, Nia and Shayna open to actually go after the women's tag team titles again.
Oh, God, please no. I cannot believe they ran that match again in front of a crowd. That was, I was about ready to give up at that point. That was just like, this match is like the defining moment of like the tail end of the Thunderdome era that just felt like it just needed to end.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I hope that they don't. Well, I mean, they did lose the match, so hopefully they don't get a title chance.
Yeah, no, I mean, Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox are very much in line for an actual shot at the women's championships after winning two non-title matches in a row.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, we will certainly see that. I don't know exactly what you do with Nia and Shayna. Actually, the whole Raw women's division is somewhat of a state of flux. You've got Charlotte defeating Rhea on Sunday, then the challenge for the rematch that ends in a disqualification. Then Rhea taking out Charlotte after the match, leading to Nikki A.S.H. cashing in for the money in the bank. Her money in the bank. Yo, great moment in time. Very happy for Nikki. But man, I don't know where I don't know where all this is going though either. There's no solid path or anything. And I'm not sure if Becky Lynch is coming back in the short term or not.
Yeah, you've got to think, like, I feel like there's been a lot of teasing with Becky Lynch coming back, but, yeah, like, it would be weird to go through all of these gymnastics, with the women's division and then have her come back.
No, I mean, her versus Nikki? I mean, unless Becky's gonna come back as a heel, there's no juice in that. Actually, I don't know what the match that has any juice. I love Nikki to death, and I'm so happy for her. But it's trying to figure out exactly where they're gonna go. I mean, is Charlotte gonna challenge for the title again? Is it gonna be a multiple person deal?
Yeah, I that's what the mystery is. Like, where does this? Because it really wasn't that much of a beatdown by Rhea Ripley to lead to such a quick win by Nikki A.S.H. So that part was kind of awkward. The fact that a babyface who's supposed to be a superhero in training, or yeah, almost a superhero. Why is she taking advantage of someone who was injured?
Because it's money in the bank. That's how it works.
But it almost seems like you need to take it over on some villain, you know? And like, Charlotte's been presenting herself as a heel, but because her whole feud with Rhea Ripley has been one giant head-scratcher, like, this just wasn't... To me, it wasn't the right time to cash in on her. And I'm with you. Like, I feel like we've talked and loved Nikki Cross since her match with Asuka way back in NXT.
Yeah,
You know, that was kind of the big watershed moment to me for her. And I've kind of been on the Nikki Cross train. So, yeah, I'm kind of happy. But, you know, her gimmick does not do a whole lot for me. I still feel like every time I look at her, her face mask is going to slip off. And that it looks uncomfortable at best. I guess the other thing that makes it weird is it, you know, was kind of weirdly put out there that she's the one that came up with this.
Because that's the truth?
Well, and I love, some of the people presenting this, like, hey, think out of the box, guys. Look at Nikki Cross did, and it's just like, honestly, from listening to podcasts, everyone has at least pitched multiple ideas.
Yeah.
Whether they resonate with Vince, I think, is the big, the big sticking point. I'm trying to look for the right wording. I don't think sticking point is the really the way to go with that one. But anyway, you know, whether it resonates with Vince or not is what matters. And this one resonated with him. And it's kind of tough. As much as I want to see Nikki successful, it's just
I think it's great. It's great. You've been spending way too much time with Jeremy Mays.
That happens.
Well, actually, you haven't been spending enough time with Jeremy Mays, seeing as we haven't had a second show for 2 weeks in a row.
I will. That one was more my fault than his fault this past week. So I will.
Right.
I will leave it there. but yeah. Yeah, it's like you said, like, I'm really happy for Nikki Cross, but it's still it just tops off a whole weird triumvirate of what went on with the top of the women's division. Like, to me, Rhea Ripley really needed, at least on the WWE quote-unquote main TV level, she needed a win. And she needed it over specifically Charlotte. And she didn't get it. And
that is true.
You know,
that is incredibly true.
Yeah. I think that Keller's, at least for me, it definitely Keller's how I look at Nikki Cross beating Charlotte. Like, why not? Like, they've been playing up Rhea Ripley's injury more than Charlotte's. And if you leave Rhea be champion and Charlotte's the one that takes her out after a Money in the Bank rematch on Raw, you know, Rhea's been a villain herself. Like, I think you get a better result in how this plays out a little bit to me. But I don't know if that helps either, really. What do you, you know, is there anything to you, like, an easy change to this angle that would make it more palatable? Not really, huh?
Not really, no. I mean, I would have been. Look, I would put all my eggs in the Becky Lynch basket heading into SummerSlam. I'm stumped where any of this is going.
Oh. I guess that is the other part to this. I would have thought that if Becky Lynch was coming back, at latest, she would have come back on Raw. I guess maybe SmackDown is the latest.
I mean, there's some chance of that.
But that doesn't help the Raw women's division in any way, shape, or form.
No, it doesn't.
So, yeah, it's, that Raw women's division is just, it's a mess, and it's not getting any better looking, you know? Just letting Charlotte rack up wins and title reigns, it doesn't help anything, honestly. Her already, you know, halfway to her dad's record, or more than halfway?
Oh, more than halfway, yeah.
At least the way she counted them out, like, that doesn't have any intrigue. They have not done Charlotte any favors. Like, even though they booked her strong, it still made her look bad in the process. You know?
Right.
It's just a bad look in general. Well, I think we've exhausted the women's division. I do want to note that Corey Graves did a piss poor job of making heavy metal and punk rock references, despite Jimmy. It's Jimmy Smith, right? Saying otherwise. I'm just gonna say that I probably have a better grasp on Corey Graves' musical taste than Jimmy Smith does, and he was severely lacking during a match that I really hope does not happen again.
Oh my god. That was maybe the most embarrassing things I have ever seen. You're in Dallas. This is the third show back. You're in Dallas. This is a hot crowd market dating back to the days of the Freebirds and the Von Erichs, for fuck's sake. It's what, the second match on the card? And one of the participants enters to complete silence. And then proceeds to have maybe the weapons match with the least crowd heat I have ever watched in my entire life.
Yeah, that is an accurate description. No one asked for it. No one cared about it. Honestly, like, you can tell that people were wanting to cheer
Elias,
and it's just like,
the only real reaction came when he picked up that cello.
Oh yes, and when he was doing his usual walk with Elias shtick.
This Riker thing. You know what? If this is a once and for all, you know, put a fork in him, he's done thing. They saw how live crowds will react to him, and this is Dallas, Texas. This is the South. This is, you know, conservative, you know, a red state, and that's how Jackson Riker was responded to. That's how war veteran Jackson Riker was responded to. The Forgotten Son. It ain't gonna get any better anywhere else.
No. In fact, it's gonna get worse elsewhere.
Yeah.
And it's another one of those things, too, that, like, they're trying to sell his intensity, but he doesn't even look that intense to me.
No. I mean, literally, maybe if he wants to be a somewhat, you know, low talk, you know, soft talking or little talking, but intense guy. Maybe the person to study was already on that damn show, Goldberg. Was already in the building. Pick his brain, I guess, or something.
Because
the guy doesn't have the guy doesn't have a dynamic personality. He's not gonna be laughing and joking. He's not gonna be doing anything like that. He's not gonna come up with any cool catchphrases. He doesn't have it.
Hey.
Once again, wrestling promoters have been trying with him for over 10 years. I don't get it.
Yeah, neither do I. Because, I mean, we were just making fun of, what's his name, Karrion Kross, for being too small. Like, and you've talked about, Riker's even smaller than him.
Yeah, he's a smaller guy with a good physique, but... Once again, in WWE, nothing special.
Yeah.
He wasn't really anything special in TNA, where even the wrestlers on average were smaller than. I think he did NWA stuff or whatever before he came to WWE or whatever. But it's just nothing about him works. He's just boring. You can put all his real life bullshit aside. He's just boring.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's what it is. Like, it's not really that he's terrible. It's that he's boring. And that just doesn't sell. Like, tattoos don't make you unboring. Long hair, short hair, doesn't really matter. This is one of those things, too, where... I'm hoping that over time the crowd makes a difference. I'm not really expecting massive changes out of the gate. And plus, the WWE's never been good about listening to the fans anyway. I think their wrestlers might be able to adjust more personally and within their own matches. But, in general, don't really want to see Jackson Riker again. But I got an odd feeling we're going to be seeing more of him as things move along. Is there anything else? I mean, we had a pay-per-view in between here on Sunday. Oh, yeah, how dare I skip Big E Langston winning the men's Money in the Bank match. I do think that's something that we need to talk about at a minimum before we get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, wonderful. I love that Big E got the Money in the Bank briefcase. It was the guy you'd hoped to win, the guy who deserved to win. We'll see how he handles his time with Money in the Bank. They rushed out the briefcase on Raw in the women's division. Will Big E drag out his cash in? Will he do it more immediately? good questions. I almost had I threw it on Twitter last night. The idea that. Well, wants to be champion. He wants his match with Goldberg.
honestly, that was the
match of triple threat.
That was triple threat was not something I was thinking about, but I will admit that having seen earlier in the evening the Bobby Lashley beat down a Kofi Kingston, to me it did seem like a pretty natural matchup for Big E to want to go after Bobby Lashley now. And maybe it does just get held off by a month because we got a Goldberg matchup in the works here for a rather large SummerSlam matchup on top of John Cena and Roman Reigns.
Yeah, no, it's, but, it's throw out there? I mean, it would make sense.
Yeah.
You know, I know, I don't know if the New Day podcast is considered WWE canon or not, but that whole big meaty men slapping meat thing, people are still quoting that. It's a total meme. You probably should just capitalize on that. Months ago, people still take that video. Still put up that video.
And plus, I mean, that I still listen to their podcast, and I'm almost completely caught up, and I'm almost bummed about it, honestly. Because that is one of those podcasts that it really just makes me laugh. And Big E is a huge reason why. You know, he's just, like, they talk about wanting to have these over-the-top, bigger-than-life personalities. And just listening to him talk, like, I don't know, like, there isn't, to me, a bigger guy in the WWE than him. Like, he is just completely ridiculous. He kind of throws it all out there as much as he can, and just, I mean, I know some of it's silly, but you can also see how ripped that guy is, and it's just like,
I don't know if ripped is the right word. He's just massive. Some people are ripped. Other people are massive. Big E is massive.
Okay, he's massive.
Yeah.
And ripped.
Yeah, so much love. Big E's a huge dude. I mean, it maybe gets lost in some of the silliness over the in the comedy over the years, but that is a bad looking man. That is a man who has legit credentials. That is a man who could tear stuff up.
So I would not be completely averse to him being the next one to take on Bobby Lashley. Because we did kind of lead off the show with it. Part of the reason that Goldberg's there is that they don't have a lot of guys on top there. And if the WWE doesn't feel like Kofi Kingston is the guy for the New Day to represent that, and I just really don't think that Xavier Woods is ever going to be that guy. Like, I love Xavier, but I don't think he has that chance.
No, I think they. I know they went with Drew, and to beat Brock and have and carry Raw for the next year. But man, you know what? It could have been Big E.
Oh,
going after Brock to avenge Kofi. That is something that absolutely could have worked then.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, honestly hadn't thought about it, but it would have been an easy storyline to work in.
Yeah, and so we've still got the Avenge Kofi story to work with Big E and Lashley.
Yep. Yeah, it really seems like to me a pretty natural transition for them to work with. But I wouldn't mind a couple of Big E wins in the meantime too. Because he was getting ready to have a feud with Aleister Black before he got released, Big E has lost a little bit of momentum. And I've got to admit, like, he did seem like, after he won, it's just like, oh yeah, he seemed like a pretty reasonable pick to win, but I was not thinking about him being the winner, when that bell rang.
Right.
So yeah, I wouldn't mind, him racking up a few wins before he challenges Bobby Lashley, just to get a little extra shine before that all goes down.
Or Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be offended with the Roman Reigns Big E match either.
No.
I guess I just think the storyline fit works a little bit better with Lashley.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything else from the pay-per-view or from Raw that really needs to be covered before we mosey on out of here?
I think we're good.
Okie dokie. Beltime Beer from Lexington, Kentucky. Mirror Twin Brewing Company, the Oregon Pale. And it has the graphics like the Oregon Trail game, which is... Was this... Did you play the Oregon Trail as a child?
Yes, I know, I did.
Okay. I'm starting to wonder if it was for people slightly younger than me, because I never ended up playing that. But it's everywhere, so I'm not completely sure. I don't know if it's because I had a Commodore 64 back in the day.
They made us play it on the computers in the library at school during library hour in elementary school. We had to play it.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's because I went to a Catholic grade school that I was not made to play it. It might have been un-Catholic. To play Oregon Trail.
What isn't?
the nuns probably did not approve. yeah, this is one of those beers. We went down to Tennessee with the wife family to have a little vacation. We swung into Lexington to Pivot Brewing and Mirror Twin Brewing to pick up some beers. And this Oregon Pale is fairly tasty. Like, it's just a nice, light, pale ale. There's nothing too crazy to say about it, honestly. Like, because pale ales are not typically super hoppy. It's only 30 IBUs. It's 5.9% alcohol, so it's not a heavy-duty beer. But I have been very happy the last couple of years drinking what I call summer beers. So they're a little lower ABV, a little more quenchable. So I don't mind turning off the IPA palate sometimes during the summer because that can dry you out a little bit. Pale ale, a little bit easier to be a little more quenching because you don't have as many hops. So, this was a solid one. Beltime Beer of the Show, Travel Edition, from Lexington, Kentucky there. So, anyone that happens to go down there, I would suggest looking for some Mirror Twin Brewing beers. So that's at DeFrango11. That is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Grain. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can download us at Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and a whole host of hosts. So have a good night, grandkids.
Later.